This week I walked around my house a little bit, and it didn't take me too long to pull together a bunch of stuff that fills my house. And this is just a collection of some of that stuff. It's stuff that people have given me or that I thought that I really had to have, so I laid down some good money and it's still sitting in the box or it's still sitting on the shelf collecting dust. But this is all stuff that I thought I really needed or somebody else thought that I really needed it. You know, like a mug. This is about 2 years old, so if you want this, you can take it home, but don't eat that snowman because it's probably hard as a rock to bust your teeth, and don't blame me, okay? You've been forewarned. But this is all stuff that I thought we needed. And here's the thing. We all have stuff around our house. In fact, we fill our houses up with this kind of stuff. I want to do a little bit of a fun activity really quick. So if Lloyd and some of the ushers, I gave them yellow sheets of paper. If you guys could just pass those out. Where did Lloyd? Oh, Lloyd took the offering back. Ryan, do you have some of the papers? Ryan. Okay, give some, Girl Scouts, can you help us out really quick and just pass these yellow slips of paper out to everybody? Okay, here's what I'd like you to do with these yellow slips of paper. We are going to do a quick 2-minute inventory. Just give me one and just pass it out to everybody. Make sure everybody gets one, okay? Yeah, somebody can go on this side and start passing out on that side. Just get them to everybody. You need your pen or pencil for this activity a little bit. So if you have a pen or pencil, grab that out. If your wife has her purse, get the purse. Well, ladies, get your purse. Maybe give one to your husband. Get a pen or pencil out. If you need a pen or pencil, raise a hand, and Lloyd or one of the ushers will put a pencil in your hand or pen in your hand real quick. Here's what we're going to do. I want you to do a 2-minute inventory. So I want you to think about your bedroom, your bedroom. Over here, somebody needs a pen, Debbie. Thank you. I want you to think about your bedroom, and I want you to mentally walk through your bedroom for 2 minutes, and I want you to write down everything that is in your bedroom. Anything you can think of as fast as you can for 2 minutes, because you probably won't be able to. You'll probably need more than that time to do all that. But I want you to inventory your bedroom. If you have a closet attached to your bedroom, that counts. If you have a bathroom attached to the bedroom, that counts, okay? So anything that's in your bedroom, kids or adults, start writing it down. So here we go. 2-minute countdown. Ready, go. 2 minutes. Okay, time's up. So how many had problems filling that list? Oh, nobody here. Okay. Here's what I'd like you to do. Really quick, look over your list, and I would like you just to quickly glance through the list and look at the things that you just can't live without. I mean, these are things like, you know, deodorant. You can't live without it, all right? So just look at those things. Glance through there. Maybe star them if you want real quick. Okay. Now I want you to look back through the list, and I want you to look at those things you forgot you had about until you wrote it down. You're like, oh, I forgot I totally even had that in there, but that's true. I step over it every night. Okay, look at those things. Maybe mark those if you have a couple of those things. Now, I'd like you to look at the list and look at the things that are in there that you thought you couldn't live without when you got it, but now you forgot you got it. You forgot you had it. So obviously, you didn't need it as bad as you thought you did. See some of those things? Let's see. In my bedroom, I had this, that. Kitchen. This was actually, that went down the basement, okay? It's sort of funny how in life we go about collecting all of this stuff. And why do we do it? Why do we collect all this stuff? And here's what I think happens for a lot of us. We live in a world where we're bombarded with the message, want more, make more, acquire more, hoard more, get more. I'd like to call it the more monster. So I thought that was sort of fun. The more monster sort of gets all of us. That more, we want more, we got to have more. Now, my vice chairman back in West Union, Iowa, when we were pastoring there, he used to tell us, he said this every now and then, I thought it was quite true. He said that you will always collect enough stuff to fill the room that you have to store the stuff. That makes sense? You'll always collect enough stuff to fill the room that you have to store all that stuff. And what's fascinating is that some people go out and they buy a new house because they want a bigger house, but once they move into the house, it's not any bigger because guess what? They fill it up with stuff. And it's just as full as the last house they just came from. This is sort of funny. When Michelle and I moved from our first apartment in Marion, Indiana, we met in college, we got married, we got this tiny little three-bedroom apartment. In fact, it was three bedrooms they converted into a one-bedroom apartment. So we had a bedroom, a living room that was small, and a kitchen that was small, and they took the closet out of the bedroom, one of the bedrooms, and made that into the bathroom. I do not think I could now fit in the shower in that bathroom any longer. Literally, the door wouldn't open. You had to slide in like this, and then you had to slide into the shower, and then you had to take a shower like this, you know, because it was so tiny. We moved from that apartment to across the street a year later or so, because God blessed us and allowed us to get something a little bigger. We moved into a two-bedroom apartment, and you know what? We were able to literally walk with a couple walks all the stuff that we owned from the one apartment to the next. It was a couple suitcases and a couple boxes, and that was it. About 2 years later, we moved from that apartment to West Union, Iowa, and they literally, it's Iowa, okay? They came and picked us up in a horse trailer. And we filled the horse trailer and our car, just 2 years of living in a bigger apartment. And then a couple years after that, about 6 or 7 years after that, we moved from West Union, Iowa, up to Oakdale, Minnesota, part of the Twin Cities. And West Union, we had a nice-sized house. And when we moved from the house up to Minnesota, we now had three kids, and they come with a lot of stuff. Right, parents? They come with a lot of stuff, too. It took two big cargo truckloads up to go up, take all the stuff back, go up again, and a U-Haul to get all of our stuff up to every house we went to that was bigger, we ended up collecting more stuff. We'll always collect enough stuff to fill the room that we have to store all that stuff. Well, I think every now and then we need to be reminded the dangers and the challenges of stuff. You know, it's sort of funny. I have a friend that I grew up with, and in their house, they have collected so much stuff. We'll just call it stuff. I think it's junk, but stuff. Because, you know, you never know when you might need that. And literally, they have paths through their house to get from one room to the next. It's amazing. You can't go in the basement because that's the husband's domain. And he collects electronic stuff that's old and doesn't work. And it's piles down there as well. And you know what's so funny is this has become such a cultural phenomenon that we now have shows about it, right? Hoarders. How about garage wars or storage wars? Because we don't have enough stuff we have too much stuff for our houses. We have to now rent a place just to house our stuff, you know? So now we have storage wars as well. And so I think every now and then we need to stop and we need to pause and we need to remember the problems and the challenges and the dangers of stuff. I want you to know from the outset, stuff isn't bad in and of itself. Okay, stuff isn't, I'm not saying that we can't have any stuff and we can't have any nice toys and we can't have some nice things, but sometimes stuff begins to take over us to the point that we need to back up and we need to remember this stuff cannot be my God. Stuff cannot be the thing that drives me. So getting rid of stuff, by the way, is a huge, huge industry in America. You know what happens with most of our stuff? I brought some pictures to remind you. That bright, shiny new car you had to have, well, eventually, all right? That new Walmart shelf item and its beautiful packaging, eventually. I don't know if you knew this, but this is interesting. Maybe some of you will want to change jobs after this. The starting salary in a small waste management firm, so a small local company, the average starting salary is $22 an hour. So you look at those garbage men and feel bad for them, don't feel too bad. They're making good money. Now, in a nationwide, a larger company, the average salary, and this is back in the early 2010 era, 2011 era, for Waste Management Inc., this is put out by New York Times in 2011, this article came out. Waste Management Inc., the average salary for an employee of Waste Management Inc., that's the big green trucks, $85,000 average employee. Now, if you're a wage earner that is salaried in Waste Management, Inc., the salaried earners in Waste Management, Inc. range from $550,000 to over $1 million per year per employee if you're salaried with Waste Management, Inc. In 2011, they had 12, let me go back to that because I want to get that right. In 2011, $12.52 billion of profits. I'm sorry, in 2010, it was reported in 2011. Getting rid of our stuff is a huge industry. And that's the stuff we actually think is junk that we throw away. A truth that you can take to the bank is this: stuff comes and stuff goes. Stuff comes and stuff goes. What is the most, what we have today, most of the stuff that we have today is going to be filling the landfills of tomorrow. And here's the deal. All that stuff that you think is your prized possessions that you think you have to have, when you die, your kids are going to think it's junk and they're going to throw it away. You think it's so valuable, but they won't, and they'll throw it away. How many of you parents have actually had to deal with grandparents or parents, and you've thrown a bunch of their stuff away? Because you got it, and you're like, it's junk. But mom thought it was awesome, and it was valuable. Because here's the truth. Stuff comes, and stuff goes. Well, let me give you a short answer to how do we deal with stuff? How do we guard ourselves with stuff? And this comes right out of the life of Jesus. I'm going to put it up on the screen here. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. If you have your Bibles or have an app, you can open that up and look with us here. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We're going to go on to another passage in just a couple minutes, but that's a short answer. How do we deal with our stuff? We need to keep a proper perspective of our stuff. Did you know that the Bible says more about stuff, the accumulation of stuff, and the means and ability to buy stuff, money, than it does, and the lack of stuff, than it does about salvation, about heaven or hell, or even about God? The Bible talks more about stuff. The only thing that's bigger or at least equal in the Bible in topics, stuff and love. And you know what's fascinating in the Bible is oftentimes when the Bible talks about love, it also talks about stuff at the same time. Because God understood something. He created us to like things and enjoy His creation, but the problem is we go overboard and we allow the stuff to begin to control us, and so we begin to have a love for stuff rather than have a love for God, a love for eternal things, or a love for the people that He created. We love the stuff more than we do than the people, than the person, than God. And so Jesus' simple take on this out of that Matthew passage, Jesus' simple take is make sure that you keep your stuff in order. Don't store up stuff that's going to be thrown into a landfill someday. That's not where you need to put your priorities. That's not where you need to find your value. Rather, find your value in eternal things. In our longing, in this desire for stuff, we often forfeit what is really important to gain what is only temporary. How many of us slave and work ourselves ragged to use the money to buy stuff, stuff that will simply one day fill a landfill? How many of you have not enough money? How many? Okay, let's rephrase that. How many of you wish you had more money? And why? So we can buy more stuff. Mostly, I wish I had more. I could get that thing or I get this thing. Well, the more monster within each of us grabs a hold of our hearts and causes us to want to have more and more stuff. And the interesting thing is our economy and more so our world is built on this. Now, some of you don't remember this. You only remember it because you've seen the pictures. But how many of you remember watching when it happened, 9/11? Anybody remember it? I had a friend from the church call and say, did you see what's happening? And I'm like, no, I'm getting ready to go to the office. He's like, turn on the television. And literally, we were watching on live television as those planes crashed into the World Trade Center. A couple days later, I was shocked, but this is so true of our world today and of the United States. The president of the United States got on, he calmed the nation down, and one of the things that he told the nation is, please, whatever you do, don't stop buying. I remember that speech. I was like, what? He said, if you stop buying, our economy will crash and they will win. Don't, out of fear, stop buying. I remember it was a whole section of the speech. I'm like, wow, what have we come to? Our entire economy is based on buying. And if we all stop buying, you all be out of a job. Think about that. Even the landfill people would be out of a job because there won't be trash. So our economy is literally run by buying and purchasing. The more monster is the engine of our economy today. Jesus had a very different take on the more monster, And he understood the dangers of the Moor monster and the accumulation of stuff and the evil that it also brings about. So we're going to take a look at another passage of Scripture. Luke chapter, we're going to go into Luke chapter 17, or chapter 12. Again, if you have your Bibles, you can turn to there. If not, I'm going to put them up on the screen as well. But I want to read through this passage, and then we're going to pull out a couple ideas, a couple truths that Jesus gave to us as to how to keep the Moor monster in check. So here we go. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." In other words, tell my brother to give me some stuff. And Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between me and you?" And then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in the abundance of our possessions." And he told them this parable: "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' And then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger houses. I'll build more storage sheds. I will rent more storage lockers. This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, build bigger ones, and there I'll store my surplus stuff, my grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with everyone who stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God.' Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storerooms or barn. Yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. For the pagans run after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that may not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I want to go back to this passage, and I want to pull out four truths that are sort of the core of what Jesus was teaching here that we need to zero in on. So here's the first truth. Life does not consist of our stuff. Life does not consist of our stuff. This is a huge truth that Jesus gives us. It's a reality check that our lives do not consist of our stuff. And I tell you what, a lot of rich folks may have trouble with that one because they like their stuff and they got a lot of stuff. But here's the deal. If you're sitting in this room and you drove to church this morning, you're one of those rich folks. At least you're a lot richer than most of the world. Most of the world doesn't have refrigeration, does not have cars, and only has one to two sets of clothes. And most of us have a lot more than that. And so we're rich. I think we all know this to be true, but sometimes we don't live it out as true in our lives. And I find myself even thinking that if I just had that, if I could just take that vacation and stay at that hotel, if I just had this thing, if I just had, you know, a bullet blender, a magic blender, then my life would be complete. I remember if I could just have the SodaStream, it would save us so much money on pop, and we could make it so much more healthy, and it would just make my life complete. And this has sat in our basement collecting dust for probably 4, 5, 6 years. See, we all know this to be true, but yet so often we look at the next shiny gizmo and gadget as that's going to bring us happiness. If I could just have that, if I just had that car, or I just had that house, or I just had this thing, then I would be happy. I remember as a kid, how many of you remember the JCPenney and Sears wish books? And the Montgomery Ward, there was three of them. Montgomery Ward, too. Montgomery Ward's long gone. Sears is almost. JCPenney is still around. But Mom would bring those wish books home at Christmas time. They weren't the big catalog. You know, nowadays it's Amazon. But back then it was, you know, books. And she would bring the Christmas wish book home, and they were like this. The front was always girl clothes, and then watches and jewelry, and then guy clothes, and then kitchen gadgets, and then what was at the back? The toy section. Forget the rest of the thing, the toy section. And it always started out girl toys, baby girl toys, boy baby toys, then girl toys, and then the guy toy section. Legos, race car track sets, remote control things. And I remember pouring through those catalogs and dreaming and thinking of exactly what I needed Santa Claus to bring. Because if Santa Claus brought that, then I was going to be it. Happy. Anybody been there? Done that? And where's all those toys? I don't have, the only thing I have left is the Legos. That's it. Out of all that stuff. You see, Jesus said life does not consist in our stuff. That's not where we should find value. It's so easy for us to get trapped by the more monster and begin to believe that more stuff will make me happy. The only difference for most adults and most kids is simply the price tag of our stuff. But the heart's the same. And Jesus says, be careful. Be careful of that, because your life does not consist of your stuff. And then he goes on to talk a little bit more about stuff. And he tells us, don't worry about stuff. Rather, trust God. So Jesus reminds us that this God that we serve is a big God, bigger than we can ever imagine. And he's the one that put the earth together, and he's the one that put all the stuff on the earth for us to enjoy even. And he's big enough to take care of us. He's big enough to give us the stuff that we need. In other words, he made it all, and he can take care of his creation. If he can take care of the birds and the grass, as Jesus said, guess what? He can take care of you. And yet we spend so much time running after taking care of ourselves, because if somebody else won't buy it, I've got to buy it for myself. And if I don't buy it, who will? And so I got to get it. I got to make sure that I'm okay, that I've taken care of everything that I need, that I have my wants and I have my desires playing out for me. This is a personal side note. One of the things that I practice personally is that every time I eat, I stop, and I do not say grace and I do not say a blessing. Now, if you ask, Pastor, will you say a blessing? I will. But I do not say grace and I do not say a blessing before a meal. I just don't practice that. But every meal, I stop and I say thank you. A big difference. Because I came to realize a long time ago, if it was not for God giving me these hands and not for God giving me this brain, not for God giving me the abilities that I have, I would not have food that I was able to provide. So in other words, I didn't provide it. God gave me the ability to provide. He's the one that provided the food. So every time I put something in my mouth, every time I eat, I stop and I just say, God, thank you. How many of you eat every day? How many of you eat more? Some of you don't eat every day. Wow. You on a diet? Is it working? How many of you eat more than once a day? You have more than one meal. How many of you never stop eating? Oh, don't, no. Okay, Ray. Think about this. If every time you stop to eat, you stop to say thanks, how many times would you be telling God thanks in a week? And how many times would that remind you, I'm not the one who really provides this. God is the one who provides this. And that's what Jesus is telling us here. He's reminding us that God will take care of you. Trust in him. Lean in him. If he takes care of birds and grass, guess what? He can take care of you. And you don't need to run around worrying about all the stuff. I tell you what, when I do marriage counseling, there's a lot of it that deals with stuff. And the running around and the chasing after the stuff. And guess what? A lot of marriages go bankrupt over how to spend money on the stuff. Because the stuff's become more important than the husband or the wife. It kills a lot of marriages. Stuff is just stuff. It comes and it goes. Stuff comes, stuff goes. You can take that to the bank. Number three, another truth that Jesus taught. Don't set your heart on stuff. In other words, don't make stuff your God. God does not want us to be irresponsible with our lives. He doesn't want us to be irresponsible with the earth. God gave us the earth. He gave us stuff to enjoy. And he wants us to enjoy those things, but he does not want those things to become our God. He doesn't want us to be enslaved to our stuff. He doesn't want us to have to serve our stuff. You know what? One of the things that scares me, we built this beautiful ark out here, but one of the things that scares me is that we could become enslaved to the ark because we have to keep the dumb thing up. Tightening bolts and putting new spray on it to protect the wood, and that's why Rich and Charlie are here. Oh, I'm sorry, I was going to tell you guys, could you make sure just kidding. You know, every time we add something to our house, we then have to also consider, you have to take care of that. If you don't take care of your car, what happens? Well, the mechanic will, and you're going to shell out the bucks, okay? You know, if you put a playground up, you're going to have to make sure that all the bolts stay tightened on that thing. So when we put things into our house, we bring things into our lives, what ends up happening is we can end up enslaved to it. We can end up having to serve that. And Jesus says, be careful. Don't allow stuff to become your God. Now, what is a God? I looked this back up this week and just reminded myself of that. What is a God? A God is anything that we worship and that we serve. I'm wondering if an alien from outer space was to come to the earth and see what we worship, would he think watching us worship our stuff, watching us fill landfills with stuff, if an alien would be like, man, that stuff must be their God, because they sure spent a lot of time worshiping and serving it. I wonder if that's what an alien would take if there's aliens out there. For many of us, stuff does become our God, and that's a danger. I was reading a chapter, a book, a couple weeks ago, and I think I told this to the speeders, but I thought it was really good. If Jesus was to come to you, and you know it was Jesus, you know, there's no question in your mind, it was Jesus. And Jesus stood before you and said, tomorrow I'm going to come back, and I'm going to take something from you. And then he walks away. He doesn't tell you what. He doesn't give you a hint as to what he's going to take. But he said, tomorrow I'm coming back, and I'm going to take something from you. What would you spend the next 24 hours worrying about? What would you be afraid that he would take? And guess what? Whatever that is, that's your God. I thought, wow. And then the author went on to quote the first of the Ten Commandments, that thou shalt have no other gods before me. Wow. What is it that you set up before God? And Jesus reminds us of that. Don't set anything up before God. He rightfully deserves first place in your lives before everything else. And what would you have a hard time giving up if Jesus demanded it or wanted it? And he says, don't set your mind on it. Don't make stuff your God. And then I love it because Jesus always gives good ideas. And when he speaks, it's a good package that he puts together. And so I like what Jesus says. So these are things we got to be careful of. But then he says, okay, but this is how you need to run life. So it's not just get rid of, but do this instead. You know, work this practice out. So he says on the last one, I'm not keeping up on the slides. There we go. He says, not only not to make things our God, but he also tells us that we should work towards eternal things. Seek God's kingdom. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Let me give you a for example here. How do we work for things for eternal? Because here's the thing. I think a lot of times in the church, we make things really, we Christianize things a lot. And yes, I think Jesus is telling us, make sure you're right with him. Make sure you're at peace with him. Make sure your heart's right with him. Make sure that's taken care of. That's an eternal thing. But I think Jesus was also referring to things that are a lot broader than just salvation, because that's a starting point. He's talking to the disciples here at this point in this story. And so I think what Jesus is saying here is when we go about life, start looking for things that have eternal consequences or significance, not the temporary, not the stuff that'll end up in a landfill someday, like out-of-date software or a magic bullet. Rather than investing in that stuff, start to look for things that invest in eternity, that have eternal consequence. So grandma, grandpas, and moms and dads, how many of you spend money at Christmas on stuff? And I'm not being convicting here and going to say, bad you. I'm not going to do that. But how many? We do. Michelle and I do. We spend a lot on relatives and our own kids. And, you know, now it's like, just give me money, mom and dad. You know, that's what we're down to. But we do that. We buy all this stuff. Now, let me give you just a for instance. Rather than buying something, this is just an example. rather than buying something that your relatives will never really need or want, I just realized this was an Indian gift. We gave this to my dad, and he gave it back, didn't he?
Woo-hoo, I thought it was cool.
Here's just an idea. Rather than buying something that, you know, the kids may think is so cool, that will break and will end up in a landfill, what if you said, you know what? This year I want to take you to a cabin and spend a weekend with you. Or let's go to a water park. You know, we have some big water parks around here, Great Wolf Lodge and really cool stuff over in Sandusky. I just want to take you somewhere, grandkids, kids, and I want to go do something just fun, and we'll eat some pizza, and we'll build a memory. And here's the deal. This is why this becomes eternal, not temporary. Because in those moments when you're going down the slide and you whack your head and they're laughing at you, all of a sudden you have those moments to start speaking into your kids and in your grandkids. When you're sitting there munching on pizza and they're slamming it down and spilling pop and you're getting frustrated, all of a sudden that eternal moment might open up where you have an opportunity to speak into the heart of your son or your daughter or your grandson or granddaughter. And if we saved all the money that we spend on stuff and started to find eternal ways to spend that money, you probably would have plenty of money to invest in some eternal things. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Be careful of the stuff, because you see, we make this out to be our God, and we make this the all-important that, well, if my grandchild doesn't get a toy from me, he's not going to like grandma. Yeah, he will. If that kid's like three, give him a piece of gum and he'll think you're awesome. Okay? Because mom doesn't let him have gum. And so Jesus reminds us, seek the kingdom. Store up treasures in the kingdom of heaven. Store up eternal things. Look for those ways to invest in eternal things rather than just the temporary that will one day fill a landfill. Jesus was brilliant. He understood the dangers of stuff. He didn't tell us to go and get rid of everything. But he commanded us to be careful not to allow the stuff that fills our homes and our lives to become our gods. Because that's not what life is about. That's not what will bring peace. That's not what will bring joy. That's not what will bring happiness. It might be temporary, and it might make you feel good for a while. But that's not the stuff that's going to give you long-lasting joy and happiness and peace. It's as if Jesus knew something about us. It's as if Jesus knew something about how we should live the best life possible. We're in a series right now. I invite y'all back to it. We're in a series. We're going to go through Easter, up to Easter with this. And we're talking about how do we have the best life possible. And Jesus is filled with, if you read through the Gospels are filled with ideas, Jesus' own teachings about how to have the best life possible. And here's the deal. A lot of the things that Jesus says will give us the best life possible runs contrary to the world today. It doesn't fall in sync with what the commercials will tell us. It doesn't fall in sync with the more monster. And so Jesus is constantly reminding us the way of the kingdom, the way of eternity is much different than the way the world's talking to you. And so that's what we're talking about over these next couple of weeks, is how do we live the best life possible? How do we have happiness even though everything doesn't go our way? And you know what? I think most of us in this room probably lived long enough to know not everything goes our way in life. Amen? Not everything does. And does that mean that once life goes down the crapper that my life has to go that way too? Or can I still be happy? Can I still have joy? Can I still have peace in the midst of it? Jesus' answer is yes. You can live the best life possible even when the cards are down. So that's what we're talking about in these couple weeks. Okay, back to the connection card. So all of you should have had this, and you hopefully didn't drop it in the bullet or in the offering plate. So you had a connection card you tore off. On the back, because this is one of those teachings this morning that has real world results or consequences or practice, however you want to label it. And here's what I want to challenge you with this week. By the way, for the number one, anything you want on this table, you can take with you on your way home. So go ahead, take it. You eyeballing something, Rich? Wait a second, let me dust it off. Just remind you that. Anything you want up here is yours. Here's my first challenge. This week, I commit to giving, and you can circle 2, 4, 6, 8, or put more things away. Make it practical this week. Make it practical. I would challenge you to make it something you think you couldn't live without. You know, this morning I was raiding through the house just one last time to make sure there's anything else, and I did not want to bring this. You know what's so stupid? This thing doesn't work that great. It's a pain to use. You never use the full tank of gas in the thing. And yet, you know what I thought this morning? I'm not kidding. But we may use that. Sound like my... It's broken too. Okay. Somebody can take that home. I don't think there's a tank in there. That might be illegal. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's why we don't use it. Because guess what? That dumb tank is like $40. Yeah. It does make good sparkling grape juice, though. Once you explode it all over your counter once and realize, don't do it that way. Okay. Okay. So this week, I'm sorry. There goes a rabbit. Okay. This week, I commit to giving 2, 4, 6, or 8 things away. How much can you give away? By the way, I want to suggest, guys, don't give your wife stuff away. And ladies, don't give your husband stuff away, okay? They need to make their own call, all right? So, was there some ladies and husbands doing that? Hey, I'm going to get rid of this. I've been waiting for that one, Pastor said. Okay, and here's the next one. This week, I will commit to making an eternal investment buy. What is a way, I want you to think through your week, what is a way that you can make an eternal investment? Maybe you've been thinking for a while, you know, I really need to have that conversation with so-and-so. Maybe, you know, I haven't called the grandkids and just told them, I love you, that's it. I don't need to hear about your day, I don't need this big, you know, I don't need my need met, I just want to tell you, as your grandma, I love you. How could you make an eternal investment this week? So give that just a quick little bit of thought here. And we're going to collect these because we'll pray over these. It'd be great if you put your name on. By the way, we won't Facebook and say, oh, did you see what Don's going to give away? Bring it over to my house. Okay. So we're not going to do that, but we want to pray for you as you just begin the practice of letting go of stuff. Because someday, here's this, I want you to keep this in your mind, someday your kids are going to come behind you and they're going to throw all that stuff away. It's not that they don't love you. It's just not valuable to them. So let's start working on it now.